In terms of do we need different standards, as I mentioned, this is a hot topic at the moment with RSSB announcing that they're going to draw on TNFD and having a staff memo out, which is considering, do they create a new standard? Do they update an existing standard? Do they create additional guidance on the existing standards? I think the more streamlined these frameworks can be, the better.
Hello and welcome back to The Greener Way. I'm Jamie Williamson with FS Sustainability. Avid listeners might recall earlier in the year, I had a discussion with First Sentier Group's Kate Turner on the back of the group's first climate and nature report being published. Now, that report was done in recognition of just how interconnected climate and nature are in First Sentier's investment approach. And it was aligned to the reporting standards of the Task Force on Nature-Related Financial Disclosures, or TNFD. Today, Kate is joining me on the pod again to talk us through that process, why First Sentier has decided to tread that path, and the lessons learned along the way. Kate, welcome back to The Greener Way.
Thanks for having me, Jamie.
So Kate, I'm thinking perhaps a good place to start would be, what are the benefits of TNFD reporting for investors? It's quite an involved process, so could they not make better use of their time elsewhere?
Yes, potentially they could. Jamie, I speak as someone who's just written a TNFD report together with my team. But we did, before we made the decision to go ahead, we did have a lot of back and forth about what is the best way to spend our time. And we didn't sign up straight away because we did have a view that with the limited time that we have in our first few years that we were focusing on nature, we really wanted to spend that time going out, understanding where are the material risks and opportunities, dependencies and impacts across our portfolios. What are our investee companies doing about it, talking to them, understanding what's material and really spending that time working with the investment teams on this topic. So I think at that point in time, reporting and TNFD was the last thing on our minds. Not that, you know, TNFD didn't even exist when we first started. We did feel by the time that we'd signed up, we felt having done all of that work, we may as well report it in a coherent way. So it was really a bit of an after fact after doing the work. Now, there was a bit of naivety there. I didn't fully appreciate just how much work it was going to be, but it was helpful for sort of putting some structure in place, getting our governance processes right. So it did help us. There were benefits there. But I think like any sustainability reporting, it should always be sort of, it shouldn't be the end goal or it shouldn't be the main driver. It's just an outcome as a result of the work that had already been done.
So would you say that the TNFD reporting helped you lift your standards, or is it the other way around, do you think?
I think, as I mentioned, TNFD certainly didn't exist when we started our work. So we were doing what we were doing without the TNFD there. So it probably didn't help us lift our standards so much, but it certainly gave us a framework to tell that story in a consistent way, which I think is the same thing that the Task Force for Climate-Related Financial Disclosures did when it exists. And it definitely did put things on our radar that weren't necessarily there. So there's some really great work in the TNFD framework about the interplay of First Nations rights and nature at a policy level that kind of wasn't exactly on our radar. So there were definitely some blind spots that it helped us focus on, but it wasn't really a standard lifter for us.
You've mentioned that, you know, after the fact you probably didn't realize just how much work it was going to be. What are some of the challenges that investors might face in adopting TNFD reporting?
I think there's definitely that piece, is that it is a big amount of work. Another challenge definitely that we faced was around data availability. So there are a number of metrics which are recommended to be disclosed, and there were metrics that we could get our hands on reasonably easily. There were some metrics that had very poor coverage or were based on estimation models that we weren't particularly confident in. So I think that was a challenge for us and would be for other investors as well, that data availability piece. And what's the data that you need to be able to tell the story? And what's the data that you need to make investment decisions, as opposed to, you know, disclosing a metric because a metric has been asked for? So I think that was a challenge for us and probably would be for other investors as well, because it's definitely not unique to us. Another thing that I found really challenging was around simplicity. We struggle with this with all of our sustainability reporting, but I think nature is such a complex topic that it was really difficult to be able to get the story across in a simple and understandable way. There are all these concepts and acronyms and things like potentially disappeared fraction and mean species abundance and these things that aren't kind of in the common language, don't necessarily make a lot of sense. So we worked really hard to get our report somewhat simple. I feel like we've got a lot further to go in terms of that readability and simplicity.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of the stuff with reporting, you know, TNFD reporting, any climate reporting, there's definitely an expectation around people's level of knowledge, like their existing level of knowledge. And so I appreciate what you're saying in terms of being able to simplify things. And your point on data as well, that seems to be a recurring theme, the availability of data and the transparency of data and how reliable that data is as well. That seems to be popping up time and time again when we're talking about reporting like this.
Yeah, I think to your point on simplicity, I think that's absolutely it, that level of assumed knowledge. The question is, who are these reports for? Are they for our clients? Are they for our clients' clients? Are they for a regulator? Are they for our peers in the market? And sometimes I think the people who are writing these reports, that's ourselves included, but also when there are mandatory reporting requirements, the regulators that are pulling those together lose sight of that a little bit.
Yeah, sometimes there's a disconnect.
Have to bring ourselves back to that. And we do mountains of reporting all over the world. One newer reporting regime that I really like is the UK Sustainable Disclosure Regime, mm-hmm. because they have a two-pager, basically, which is an addition to the product documentation. And it's just, how can you make this really simple for a retail investor? And I think that's a really nice concept to start with, is a limitation on the number of pages that you have, because otherwise you can quickly find it getting out of hand in terms of length.
Yeah, and putting the retail investor front and center is really what's most important, right? Mm. Like having them front of mind when you're making these decisions and developing products and the communications around them.
Yeah, if you're trying to help them make better informed decisions, absolutely.
Kate, what are the benefits of combining climate and nature together? We've kind of already gone through a bunch of them already, but mm-hmm. there are many separate frameworks. There is the TNFD, there's also the IFRS S2 and many others. In your view, do we need these or should they all be combined? Or is there even a chance of that ever happening?
Yeah, and it's a very topical conversation at the moment, actually. I think for us, we have been trying for quite some time to think through what are the interdependencies across different ESG issues. In the podcast, it's something that you and I spoke about a few months ago, that we put a white paper together to try and say thinking about all of these issues as siloed topics is really unhelpful. One, it creates more work, and two, it doesn't give you a full picture of what are the risks and opportunities that a company is facing when you're looking at investing in a company or already invest in a company. So I think that the reason that we did a combined climate and nature report, or one of the reasons that we did a combined climate and nature report, is we see those issues as so interconnected, and separating them out, we don't really see that as incredibly helpful. So that was important to us. As I said, we've been thinking about it for a long time in the investment process now, but we've been thinking about it less from a governance point of view. So the way that we report on these issues internally and externally until now has been quite separated. The policy frameworks have got different positioning on human rights, on climate, on nature, which doesn't recognize that connectedness. So I think for us to combine those two reports into one, climate and nature, helped us think about it at a broader kind of governance and strategy level rather than just in the investment process, which is definitely important. In terms of do we need different standards, as I mentioned, this is a hot topic at the moment with IWSB announcing that they're going to draw on TNFD and having a staff memo out, which is considering, do they create a new standard? Do they update an existing standard? Do they create additional guidance on the existing standards? I think the more streamlined these frameworks can be, the better. Yeah. It was really hard for us putting TNFD and TCFD together when they're almost identical, but not exactly identical. That's where it kind of started to get really sticky. So definitely it's a balance of how do you streamline those different frameworks, but how do you ensure that the importance of some of these issues doesn't get lost by combining it in with a whole bunch of other things. So I think that's the challenge that IWSB will have to wrestle with going forward.
Finally, Kate, now that you've gone through all of this, what would you say were the key learnings for First Sentia from this process?
Look, I think we've had plenty, and I think there are plenty more to come as we continue to report and refine our reporting. I think one key learning is definitely that integration process was hard for all of the reasons that I have talked about, but I still think really important and worth it. And I am glad that we combined the two reports together. I think another learning was around having those governance structures in place that will set us up for long-term success. As I said, our first few years of looking at Nature, we were really just focused on company-level issues, company-level exposure to these topics. This allowed us to kind of take a step back and make sure that we had those structures and processes in place. And then I think another learning is, as we were just talking, just that need for more streamlining in terms of the frameworks that we have globally. It is quite problematic having to report under so many different frameworks across different jurisdictions on different topics. So I think the more that we can streamline that, one, it makes it easier for us and we can spend more time engaging with companies and addressing these issues in all of the ways that we have the ability to, but also it makes it better for the end investor who doesn't have sort of this myriad of different reports in highly technical language to get through.
Yeah, of course. Well, Kate, thank you so much again for jumping back on the pod with me. And it's always lovely having a chat with you. So thank you.
Thanks for your time, Jamie.
The Green Away podcast is a product of FS Sustainability. All information in this podcast is for education and entertainment purposes only. It is not intended as a substitute for professional, legal, or tax advice. Before making any financial decisions, you should read the product disclosure statement, and if necessary, consult a licensed financial professional. For more information, head to the disclaimer page on the FS Sustainability website, fssustainability.com.au.